Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, in association with MSW Media. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson. My guest today is Allison Gill of The Daily Beans and Mueller, She Wrote. I always enjoy talking to her. Of course, we're going to have a fun conversation, but before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, supported by listeners, and it's woman-run. A great big thank you to everybody who supports the show. If you enjoy today's podcast, visit patreon.com/startmeup. Check out all the tiers. I do include a tier with a much shorter intro and no ads. You can hear the free shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and they're followed up by What's Up, a show just for patrons where I talk about anything that comes to mind. It's a little more personal, kind of like my online diary. Visit patreon.com/startmeup, and don't forget, you can find Start Me Up on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever podcasts are found. Now please enjoy my conversation with Allison Gill. Welcome and happy birthday, Allison.
Oh my gosh, thank you. How are you today? It's still morning here on the West Coast, and we've already had so much news today.
Oh my God, I know.
It's been a crazy week, and so like it's a very happy birthday for me today.
Yay! Yeah, it's been absolutely insane, and I guess it is. It's lots of good news for democracy, even though there's some still, you know, Manchin is still being a dick, but whatever, we'll get to that in a minute. But but yes, good news. Okay, so before we get into all the news of the day, and we're going to go over some of the stuff that happened yesterday with Letitia James, or actually the night before, but still, now, have you heard this rumor? And it's just a rumor, there's nothing to back it up, but there's a rumor out there that Trump has been for decades an FBI informant. And that because of the fact that he is an FBI informant, that he's would never be arrested. Have you ever heard that rumor?
I have. I've talked to our mutual friend on Twitter, Lincoln's Bible, about that possibility.
Right.
Quite extensively, as a matter of fact.
So what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's interesting because you can be a CI, a criminal informant, for mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. And then be taken off the CI list, mm-hmm. Where you're no longer a criminal informant. And he clearly doesn't have immunity for the Trump Organization, mm-hmm. at least going back to the early 2010s, because of the Trump Organization and Alan Weisselberg indictment from the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. Mm-hmm. I also don't know if federal criminal informants are immune from local and state prosecution. I'm not quite sure how that works. Mm-hmm. However, I have also heard rumors that there are going to be superseding indictments on the Trump Organization and probably Weisselberg coming out of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, but not yet Donald Trump. And so I don't know if that's because mm-hmm. they're just waiting to get the correct, because, you know, he's always insulated himself. He never writes mm-hmm. anything down, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm basically waiting to see if he can be indicted.
Hmm. Wow. So now let's back up for a minute. You mentioned that they could be taken off that list of criminal informants. Would that mean that he is then, available to be indicted? Does that mean he can be indicted, or does he always get protection?
It would be for past crimes, right? Because you can't immunize someone from future crimes.
Gotcha.
So, like, let's say you have a criminal informant who's been informing for you for 10 years, and then that guy goes out and murders someone.
Right.
He's not immune from that crime. And so I think that what we may be looking at, and this is just speculation, is that he was pulled off the, you know, criminal informant list, if he was on it to begin with, a while ago. And so any crimes that occurred subsequent to that, he would be culpable for, I would imagine. But, you know, I would have to ask some of my more like inner law enforcement pals like Andy McCabe or Pete Strzok, like what it means to be a criminal informant. We know Carter Page was an informant.
Yes. Yes.
But then
yes.
they put a FISA out on him. So, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of juicy. Well, that's good to know. And, you know, I mean, I think it was Lincoln's Bible that I first heard this from. And last night I did Zev Shalev's show on Narrative TV, and he brought that up. And he said that he thought Trump would never go to jail, at least, I think he was specifying 1-6, but he said he would never go to jail just because he was an informant. And now I can't predict. I would not be surprised if Donald Trump never goes to jail. I wouldn't be surprised. But on the other hand, I do think it's possible that we could see, because there are just like a freaking myriad of charges and allegations and eventual indictments. And I think at some point it may catch up to him, especially, you know, we all hear the RICO charges for mobsters are usually what get them. And, you know, we're going to get into the James story in a minute. But even before that, I just want to throw out there some of the stories that we've been seeing coming down today is the January 6th committee says the panel expects next to ask Ivanka Trump to cooperate with the investigation. I think people think that Ivanka would flip on her father. And I think, you know, we'll see what happens and we'll see how far she goes because she's got to protect herself. But as far as her father, I mean, would you agree that she would like flip so quickly?
I don't know. And, you know, this is a letter from the 1-6 committee. It's not a Department of Justice subpoena.
That's true. Yeah.
Although we don't know if she's been subpoenaed or not by the Department of Justice. We don't know anything that's going on with the Department of Justice. But I honestly don't know, because we know that Donald, the only acceptable way to respond to the 1-6 committee in Donald's eyes is to completely ignore them, like Bannon did.
Yeah.
He doesn't even want you to go in and plead the fifth. He doesn't even want you to send him anything. And we saw that, you know, after Mark Meadows got clearly reprimanded for sending over a few documents. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't know if she'll turn on her father. That is a very weird relationship.
Yes. Well, and you're right. Like the 1-6 committee, she would have no reason to flip because she's not going to be facing jail time or anything because of that. But as you mentioned, when we talked the other day on your podcast, that how did you say it? Like if somebody pleads the fifth in a civil case, then goes over to the criminal case, and then they can say, okay, well, you clearly have something to hide because you pleaded the fifth. As far as Ivanka's concerned, you know, with the information that they're going to be getting from the archives, they might have something, you know, because the Supreme Court said, yeah, go ahead and use that. They might have something that she realizes could be sent over for criminal referral on her behalf, and therefore, she agrees to, I don't know, you know, like she agrees to work with him for that reason. I don't know. And obviously, none of us know, but it certainly is kind of an interesting consideration.
Yeah. And I don't know what she's, you know, culpable for or what you can prove criminal intent for, other than knowing a felony was happening and not telling anyone. But, you know, they rarely go after that misprision of a felony.
Right.
But yeah, when you're talking about pleading the fifth in a civil case, that's up for the New York Attorney General, and that can be used against you in a civil case. It cannot be used against you in a criminal case.
Because
otherwise, what's the point?
What's the point
of pleading the fifth? But you know, the interesting thing is, I mean, I think people like Ivanka. I keep calling her Ivanka, and that's not it. It's Ivanka. Ivanka. Pence. Maybe even Bill Barr, who bowed out before any of this shit went down. I think folks like that could be granted immunity in order to give their full testimony of what went down. Would she do it against her own father? She's facing that not only with the January 6th committee, but potentially with the Department of Justice for 1-6, because they've already started getting those National Archives records. And then this letter comes out this morning to Ivanka that they want to discuss things with her. And then we also have to remember, because the Supreme Court decided that Trump has zero privilege here, that sort of frees up the Department of Justice to indict folks like Mark Meadows, where they might have been like, he might have claims to privilege. He
right.
doesn't, but it would
right.
be harder. It'd be harder case for them than like Bannon.
Mm-hmm.
And now maybe we see the floodgates open and we see the committee start going after people who were in the room like Ivanka, because now we know, and the Supreme Court has said, you have no privilege claims. And, mm-hmm. and so we might be seeing, we could see a subpoena of Ivanka Trump if she decides not to cooperate, and she could be held in contempt if she defies it. But again, and you and I have talked about this, this is the committee. The point mm-hmm. isn't to mm-hmm. put people in jail. Mm-hmm. The point is to tell the story of what happened
yes.
on January 6th. And you don't necessarily need, they have the evidence
mm-hmm.
that they're going to question Ivanka about, and they can present it. They don't need her to come on and tell everybody. That would be very damning and amazing,
mm-hmm.
but it's not necessary. What needs to happen is the Department of Justice needs to subpoena these folks. That's what needs to happen. And so far, we don't have any indication of that, but it also mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily mean that it hasn't happened, because mm-hmm. we didn't know about all the people subpoenaed in the Bannon indictment
mm-hmm.
thing, all the people brought before the grand jury and the Tom Barrack thing. The Rudy raid was a surprise to
mm-hmm.
us. This
mm-hmm.
DOJ is very, very tight-lipped.
Yeah. And, well, you know, there's also the, okay, maybe she's not necessarily going to flip on her father because of the 1/6 stuff, but then there's the Letitia James stuff. And, you know,
right.
they're all involved in this. And I don't know, I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know how Letitia is moving along. And this is a civil case. But then there's also the federal case. There's the criminal case. And they're working together. And so maybe if Ivanka sits down with whatever that guy's name is who escapes me right now for the criminal thing in New York, you know, she might flip just in order to, because I could see her going against her family for a number of reasons. She, you know, that whole family is obviously in it for themselves. They need each other at this point. But I think if they see another part of, you know, if they see that the family is rotting and is in big fucking trouble, I know she sets herself apart from them. I think she believes she's more intelligent than they are. And she would never go to one of Trump's rallies, whereas obviously both of his sons have gone to the rallies, and you know, she doesn't want to have anything to do with the MAGA crowd. She always considered herself kind of, you know, like the liberal elitist type, and now she's stuck with this crowd that is nothing like her, and she does not want to associate with those people. And so, you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens, whether it's 1/6 or with this. All this fucking damning stuff coming out of New York. Boy, this is exciting. And you did all these threads yesterday, these long-ass threads on what Letitia James has collected, what she's doing. Can you kind of just go over the, you know, the basics of that to fill everybody in who's not familiar at this point?
Well, sure. Let me tell you about that. But I first want to respond to the Ivanka thing in New York. She and her brothers are likely more criminally culpable and have more evidence against them than their father, because their father doesn't write anything down. And they have cell
right.
phones, they have
yeah.
signal, they have email. So I imagine a scenario in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office where they've got that kind of evidence to charge the kids, but not the dad,
mm-hmm. mm.
and see if they can use the you know, because
mm-hmm.
I don't think, I mean, whether Ivanka works with the January 6th committee or not, I don't know. But
mm-hmm.
I don't think that any of those kids are willing to go to jail for their father.
Right, right.
So,
wow.
And if they have things that they can charge, if they have things that they can press them with,
mm-hmm.
we'll have to see. Now, as far as the threads yesterday from the New York attorneys, it was three threads. Each one was about 20
yeah.
tweets long. I was trudging through this document. It's 115 pages. And basically, she says, hey, Donald, the dad, and Junior and Ivanka don't want to come in and test. They filed a motion to quash my subpoena. So in response, my motion to deny their motion to quash the subpoena and compel their testimony, we were doing our investigation out of the public eye. But since they've opened their big mouth, I feel now compelled to tell you where we're at with the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So I have seven things I can tell you about without jeopardizing the investigation. I think she picked these seven things because Manhattan NDAs are, got all the information that in those seven things, so she's not wrecked, she's not stepping on them. That's like one of the big things, right? Like, you don't talk about stuff, and they're working together very closely. You don't talk about stuff and witnesses that you have testified for you but haven't testified for him. You wait until they have that testimony locked down and all the data and all of the evidence locked down. So those seven things, all seven things that she put out there are have to be stuff that the Manhattan DA already has. And that's Alvin Bragg, used to be Cy Vance. Now, what she went through is, she goes, there's lots more we're investigating that I can't tell you about, but since they opened their mouth, I'm going to tell you where I'm at in this investigation with these seven things. And those seven things are a lot. It's like, you know how your professor is like, we've got a 5-question test today, but each question has 6 parts.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. So some of the main highlights, Weisselberg admitted to overvaluing Trump's apartment by give or take $200 million, drop in the bucket, couch change for these people.
Right.
They talked about Ivanka being offered to purchase an apartment for $8.5 million. That's what they're going to sell it to her for. But then they turn around on their annual financial conditions report, which is what they send out to lenders to get money and Forbes to sound rich. They put on that report that the apartment's worth $32 million, you know, like absolutely ridiculous markups. Then they have some, not only estate fraud, but federal tax fraud with something called Seven Springs Estates, which we've been talking about on, you know, on our show for a very long time, because that's what's called a conservation easement. Basically, what that says is, I've got some land. I could develop it later. I could build some luxury homes on it. Right now, it's worth, you know, $50 million. But if I built these houses, it would be worth $291 million.
Right.
And where did you get that assessment? Well, I had a call with Eric Trump, you know, who just decided.
Right.
And then, in fact, when they get the appraisal for what it would be worth if they developed it, it was $56 million.
Yeah.
Still nowhere near $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so that leaves you, because if you can get a tax break on what you haven't developed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves a big, giant door open for fraud. Like, let's say I bought Devin Nunes's farm for for $65, and I said, hey, I'm going to develop this farm later and it's going to be worth $1 billion.
Yeah, right.
So $1 billion minus $65, I can take that as a write-off, but
yeah.
I don't have any actual plans to develop it, nor would, if developed, would it be worth anything like near there. And he's defrauding.
Yeah.
He's falsifying business documents and defrauding the taxpayers, both federally and in the state of New York. And so that's just one property. He's done this on easements with other properties, conservation easements with other properties. And then he does this liquidity thing where he takes, like, when he actually ends up getting appraisals and finds out that his shit's not worth shit, he's like, oh, shit, well, I can't keep it on the books. I'm going to move it over into something called general real estate file, where I don't have to tell you where every single golf course, what they're worth. I can just add all up, sort of. And I'm going to drop another golf course in there that's $8 million for, but actually I'm going to say it's worth $190 million, hide the fact that the other thing went down in value. So he's hiding assets for the tax man.
Yeah.
But then when he reports it on his annual financial condition report, through Mazars, which is why those Mazars documents are so important. He said, oh, it's worth, you know, $600 million, probably. Who told you that? Outside professional. I had an outside professional. And then James goes, we couldn't locate one single outside professional. We only have the actual appraisal that you got, and it says it's worth like $9. So,
yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of evidence there. But they definitely want to compel his testimony. But that filing, and I think I told you this when you were on my show yesterday or a couple days ago. Normally I go through a filing like that. I find like two things, and I'm like, these are the two things.
Right.
Every single paragraph was a thing.
Yeah. There was wall-to-wall crime. And then also, they do this so they can go borrow money against that. And so banks don't want to give them money now. So, you know, I mean, I think that's been around for that, that idea has been around for a while, that they don't want to do business with Donald Trump, but now they're seeing what's happening and everybody understands exactly what's happening. So that's going to hurt them. And then, you know what? I've got to, I want to take a real quick break and then we'll just be right back. Hey, this is Kimberly. Real quick, if you're not already a patron of the show, please check out patreon.com/startmeup. You'll see all the different tier options. I would really appreciate it if you check them out and become my patron. You'll have my undying gratitude. Thanks so much. Okay, so we're back. And I mean, there's just so much fucking going on because today I'm going to go, I have to go get it, but the Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis is requesting a special grand jury to aid in her investigation of former President Donald Trump and his efforts to overturn the Georgia's 2020 election. So there's that going on too. Now, obviously, when we are talking, I know I'm skipping all around, there's just so much fucking stuff and there's only so much time. When we're talking about Donald Trump, you know, Michael, we all know Michael Cohen said he talks in code. And, you know, it would be a real shame if your wife were to get hurt if X were to happen, which doesn't necessarily put him at the center of the crime. Just because of the way he speaks and what he does, he's very mobster. So in this situation, in the Fulton County situation, we have him on the phone with Raffensperger saying you need to find these 11,000 votes or something like that. Do you think that that phone call is enough to get him, to indict him? And well, to indict maybe, but do you think prosecutors would feel like they could get a conviction with that?
Yeah, I do. And the reason I do is because he said 11,780. Had he stuck, because when he earlier on that call, he said, I won Georgia by 400,000 votes. At least he's like 400,000 votes. Okay, so you, if let's say he truly believes he won Georgia by 400,000 votes. Let's say he believes that in his head. Let's say Sidney Powell talked him into it. Let's say Rudy Giuliani talked him into it and showed him weird graphs of nothing that, you know, here's the proof, sir. If you believe you won by 400,000 votes, then what you say is, find those 400,000 votes.
Right.
You don't say find me 11. Just enough votes.
Yeah.
And that is explicitly and precisely against Georgia election interference law. It's like it was written for him.
Right.
Now, Lindsey Graham's a little harder because Lindsey Graham's like, we need to compare signatures. We need to compare signatures. That's speech or debate. That could be covered. Who knows? But it could be part of the conspiracy. Now, I think she's got a great case. It's slow going. She did come out and publicly say that she plans on making a charging decision. She estimates she'll have a charging decision by the first half of this year. That's June, folks. Mm-hmm. That's not far away.
Yeah.
And that we should see a resolution of this case by the end of the year. And again, if she makes a charging decision, we might not know about it until she actually charges or comes out and says she didn't have enough to charge. That's a really fast moving RICO case if she is in fact going for RICO, which she has successfully done in the past with the school administrators cheating scandal, much less worse than what happened with Donald Trump. But she's impaneled a special grand jury. I mean, that special grand jury is able to subpoena and they can do fact finding. They are not a body that hands out indictments. She already has a grand jury that can do that. This is one where she's going to subpoena Raffensperger. She's going to subpoena, you know, everybody who's involved. Yeah. And then once she has all of that evidence, then she can move forward with building her case. And if she feels like she has a case and weighs it against all of the laws that require you to, you know, make sure that all your T's are crossed and your I's are dotted before you indict, then she would go to a grand jury and try to get an indictment. For what? I don't know. Yeah. For who? I think Trump can easily be indicted. Every lawyer I've talked to said that that is the most open and shut case for Trump to be indicted.
Currently. Wow, that would be freaking awesome. And then, you know, he can't afford good lawyers. So even though there are, you know, sometimes the lawyers can speak in such a way, find the loopholes, find the ways around the law, he can't even afford, I mean, you know, he's got people who takes him in the land, you know, in front of a landscaping store, Four Seasons Landscaping, because they just can't even fucking get that right. So, yeah, I mean, he's not going to have good representation in any of these cases. And so that should be interesting. Let me ask you, because there was a tweet that I saw in your feed that somebody else, can't remember who said it, but it was the idea of, if Trump feels that he's in legal trouble, that will make him want to run because he feels he'll get protection from the presidency. Now, what I want to ask about this is, there are two camps out there. There are people who think that if he runs, he's a shoo-in, he's going to get the nomination, and that there's a very strong chance that he could win. There's another camp out there that thinks that he would probably be the worst candidate for the GOP just because we saw what happened to him in 2018, because 2018 really was a referendum. It was a mandate against Trump, and 2020, obviously, Republicans didn't want to vote for him. They voted for Joe Biden as opposed to just not voting at all. So we know that he already has this record, this track record of losing. But so that camp thinks that he would probably lose if he were to run against Joe Biden. But let's throw in there. So I want to know what you think about if it were Biden v. Trump in 2024. And then I want to see what you think if for some reason Ron DeSantis gets the nomination, what kind of chances he would have against Biden.
Well, if we don't pass some sort of voter protection laws, the Republican will have a great chance of winning because mm-hmm. Republican state legislatures can throw fake electors all day. They'll be legally able to do that, which they were not legally able to do in 2020. Now, mm-hmm. We're talking 2024. Mm-hmm. The only, first of all, if he wins, okay, there's only a Department of Justice memo that says you can't indict a sitting president.
Okay.
And if he wins, we're not going to have a friendly AG anyway. So right. It doesn't matter what the DOJ does if Trump wins in 2024. Mm-hmm. The state, Fulton County, and New York, they don't have a memo that says you can't indict a sitting president, nor can he be pardoned for any crimes that he's convicted of in those states. So it's kind of irrelevant. That, and we're talking DOJ has 60 days till 2024 to, you know, they have that unwritten rule where they don't indict people mm-hmm. within a certain window. Mm-hmm. And so that's plenty of time mm-hmm. for the Department of Justice to do what it needs to do. I think people are somehow feeling that the clock runs out this November. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. And, you know, there might be a scenario where we win some seats in the Senate and lose the House. And then, yeah, we have to listen to fucking Jim Jordan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, bah, 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 for 2 years, but the committee is going to be done by then. Well, the public hearings will be over. It will mm-hmm. have served its purpose. Any criminal referrals will have been made, and the Department of Justice can't be stopped by Congress.
Right.
They can be mucked up. They can throw a bunch of, you know, like requests for documents at them and stuff, mm-hmm. but they don't, if they cannot stop a Department of Justice investigation. So Trump, I can see him wanting to run so that if there are voting rights aren't passed, he can win and then just pardon everybody mm-hmm. and shut down the Department of Justice and yeah. nothing matters.
Right.
That's why voting rights are so important.
That's why they're so important. Oh, my God. Okay, so let's just say voting rights are passed and Ron DeSantis is the nominee. Do you think he has a shot in hell?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we'll have a lower turnout than we did Democrats for mm-hmm. the presidential election in mm-hmm. 2024, but I still think odds being equal, if the thing is run fairly, right. I think the Democrat will win. Not by as much, kind of like Obama. Right. You know, it was a blowout in 2008, and it was like mm-hmm. a squeaker in 2012, yeah. but well, not a squeaker. He won, but hands down. But so I think what really needs to happen with voting rights is that, you know, Biden has said yesterday, maybe we'll break it up into smaller parts. The first mm-hmm. part is you have to make sure that state legislatures can't overthrow the will of yes. the people and send in electors. That is the number one yes. thing that has to pass.
It, absolutely. Oh, my God. Absolutely. We have to get that because it's overwhelming to think about it. I mean, it's at the point where, I mean, I've said this before, but whenever I see Manchin or Sinema, I know they're not the only ones, but they're the main ones. Anytime I see Manchin or Sinema, I have to fucking mute the television. I can't look at it because I just get so upset. I already know what they're doing. I don't need some MSNBC pundit to tell me what they're doing. I know what they're doing, and it's just so infuriating, and it's awful. You know, and it's funny because people are always saying that, you know, we should not necessarily put all the focus on Manchin and Sinema, you know, that it's the Republicans that are blocking it. But unfortunately, we're at a place in time where we have written them off. The Republican Party has to be written off. It's basically just, you know, a bunch of fucking neo-Nazis, fascist white power people who are never going to do the right thing. I'm hoping that somebody like Lisa Murkowski steps up. She did step up for the ACA. And it's funny because you dare to say something like that on Twitter and all you get back is, she won't. But people forget. She has voted against her own party in the past. And
you know what? Instead of crying that she won't, why don't you give her office a call and tell her she should?
Exactly. And so, which I have done multiple times, and I've tweeted to her, and because I think, you know, that she is somebody that does love her country, even though she may have different ideas about how to run it. She is one of those old schoolers. And, you know, people like to speculate, including me, as to why certain Republicans like Lisa Murkowski might go along with the bullshit Republican. And, you know, maybe it does have something to do with fear of, you know, retaliation, with Trump putting out, you know, a target on your back. I don't know what motivates her. I don't know if she's afraid. I don't know what her deal is. But, you know, and some people say she should just become a Democrat. I don't think she wants to become a Democrat, but I don't care what she wants to do. I just want her to fucking give us something for the filibuster, because yesterday, evidently, Joe Manchin said that he's not even interested in a talking filibuster, which is clearly Coke money talking. He's getting Republican money.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's working for them. And I mean, I think even you retweeted, somebody said, let's stop focusing on primarying senators who are going to be up in 2024 and, you know, start getting, you know, worrying about voting rights now. And that's true, because
Ron Johnson. Yeah. Getting senators that we can elect in 2022.
Yes.
And I think that is my idea. My idea
is to find
Republican senators who are retiring in 2022.
Yes.
And get them to vote with us for voting rights. That's what I think.
What is your gut telling you about these voting rights bills?
I think when the J6 committee has done, it's presented its case, mm-hmm. and it wants to shore up the Electoral Count Act, perhaps mm-hmm. including a provision that it cannot accept overturn states of electors by state legislators,
mm-hmm.
That perhaps that can get passed with a couple of Republicans, maybe ones that are retiring. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty basic thing.
Yeah.
And I think that the country, once they see these public hearings, mm-hmm. will want that Electoral Count Act shored up and amended. And that's their legislative purpose anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's their whole purpose.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think, that's the least we can do.
Okay.
More would be great.
Mm-hmm.
For example, don't make it illegal to bring water to people standing mm-hmm. while they're trying to vote. You know, simple shit like that. Stop taking all of the early voting out of districts with predominantly
yes.
black and brown voters. Stop, you know, stop making, you know, taking polling places
mm-hmm.
out. And we're already seeing the negative impacts of this, and we're going to have to vote harder. I know that sounds weird.
I know.
But we aren't going to get our full voting rights package. I still want us to, and I'm still going to fight. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But we got to be prepared to overcome these hurdles like we did last time. Vote in numbers too big to manipulate, and at the same time try to shore up that Electoral Count Act, and really focus on getting more seats in the Senate. Now
mm-hmm.
that's totally useless if we can't hold the House.
Mm-hmm.
We get 53 senators. Doesn't matter if we can't
right.
hold the House. All bills expire. They would have to be re-upped
mm-hmm.
by the House, and we wouldn't have a majority to do that. So
yeah.
we really have to focus. And I just want everyone to know, while I'm going to be fighting my damnedest to hold the House and the Senate, if we lose one or both, that's not quite the end of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
I think the minute hand ticks closer to midnight if that
mm-hmm.
happens.
Mm-hmm.
But 2024 is really what we're looking at.
One of the things that concerns me is if we do lose the House, and like, I mean, I get what you're saying. If we do lose the House and we do lose the Senate, I'm fearful that people are just going to, you know, fold into themselves and feel like it's all worthless and pointless and hopeless. But one of the things that I want to end on today is the idea that I think we are going to be seeing the wheels of justice turning in somewhere in the Trump family, whether it has to do with RICO charges, whether it has to do with Georgia or 1-6 or any of these, so many possibilities of indictment or some kind of accountability. And I'm wondering if you think that, because it will really be devastating. It will be really devastating if the House and the Senate goes full red. And I have been seeing, I just want to add this, two people today, just friends of mine, think that if we don't pass these bills and get the important things passed, that we're going to see what happened. The same thing is going to happen in 2022 that we saw in 2020, where it was like, oh yeah, you want to keep me from the polls? Well, I'm just going to bend over backwards to make sure my vote is counted. Do you think we're going to see that kind of an attitude in 2022, which is the first part of my last question?
Yeah, I do, because I think a lot of people are forgetting between now and then we're going to hear arguments in the Supreme Court on the Mississippi abortion ban.
Right, okay, yeah.
And if we as Democrats can rally around this single issue, because for decades there were single issue Republican voters to try to ban abortion. Well, guess what? They've handed us this gift. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say that, because so many women have had their rights stripped.
Political.
But now it is our issue. Mm-hmm. It's no longer theirs. Mm-hmm. So that's what we need to rally around. That's the message we need to go forward into 2022 with.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so the second part is that if we do lose the House and we lose the Senate, do you think that it will be like the collective attitude toward what will happen in 24 will have some be uplifted somehow if there is legal accountability in the Trump family? Like, will that carry us through without devastating us too much?
Legal accountability for the Trump family?
Just in any way.
I hope so, but I don't think so. Just like I don't think, and I didn't want Democrats to run on Mueller in 2018.
Yeah.
I don't want them to run on who gets arrested in 2022.
Yeah.
That's kind of not the point. It's a weird message. Mm-hmm. It might give us a little more hope, but I do have to say this, and this might be a little nihilistic and a little more pessimistic than people are used to hearing from me, but if we lose one or both of the houses, and again, I only am saying this in a hypothetical situation, because mm-hmm. I'm going to fight my ass off to make sure that we don't, and I'm going to stay positive on that. If we do, and people check out and don't vote, then we lose our democracy, then that's on us.
I totally agree.
It's on the voters.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because there is, I did a thread last night that was not a very, I fucked up the title of it. But regardless, the idea is there is no one person. We were saying this with Mueller. You know, it's like Mueller, although everybody was waiting for Mueller, it's not Mueller that's going to save the country. It's going to be the people who save the country. And I think we just have to keep pushing that out there, because when we're feeling down and devastated, I mean, look, right now, the Republican Party, the Republican voters, they would have a lot there's a lot for them to feel like, oh, God, I don't know if we can win. I don't know if we can make this. But they're strong. They are they're not giving up. And we have to we have to get rid of the fucking Eeyore Dem. And we have to replace it with, look, it's hard and it's tough, but democracy is worth fighting for. It's like you would fight for your house. If somebody was trying mm-hmm. to get into your house, you would call the police. You would, you know, you would do what you get your baseball bat, whatever it is to defend your home. You wouldn't just lay there in bed and go, oh, well, they're almost in the window. Nothing I can do.
And then blame your neighbor for not stopping them.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, we've just got to keep fighting. And I hope you're right, that if we don't get these bills passed, at the very, very least, we can do that thing for electors to keep them from overturning a fair election. So fingers crossed, and that's where we're going to end on a fairly kind of hopeful note on your birthday. But this is, I think we've got some promising things in the mix. I think there's definitely stuff to be hopeful about, and we've just got to keep plugging. What else can we do?
That's exactly it. We have to get the right messaging out, and we have to stick together, and we have to act like winners, because we are winners. And again, if we get the government we deserve.
Yes. 100%. So, all right. Thank you for being on the show. I love talking to you. You have such a cool and unique perspective. Obviously, before I let you go, tell everybody where they're going to find you.
Everywhere. I'm right behind you right now. No, I'm the host of the Daily Beans podcast, which comes out weekday mornings. I'm also the host of Mueller, She Wrote, which comes out Sundays. This Sunday, I'll be talking to Pete Strzok and also do the MSW Book Club. And right now, we're covering a book. We're doing a series on a book called Corruptible, Who Gets Power? And it's by Brian Clough. And I really, if you haven't read it, oh, man, it's so good. You would love it. It's like scientific studies mixed with Who Gets Power mixed with humor. It's amazing.
Wow. Interesting. Awesome. And everybody, I mean, you're fucking brilliant. So everybody, I'm sure, is already following you. But if they're not following you, go follow her because she's fucking awesome. And, of course, you can find me at Author Kimberly Ley on Twitter. My books are on Amazon. Thank you so much, Allison. Happy birthday, and we'll catch you next time.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye.